Tonight the plan is to try to finish some odds and ends, but also to kind of put closure on the topic of Chukas Akum that we've been discussing for the last number of weeks now, in some way or form. I think you have the phone for that. So tonight, just because we've been a little bit away from the fundamental disagreement about Chukas Akum for some time, we got sidetracked with the secular dates and the secular calendars and all of that interesting topics. So just to give us a brief review and background of the two main opinions, and then to kind of approach a few different questions that come up that are discussed in the poskim and how they're dealt with in some of the more contemporary opinions. One of which is the Bas Mitzvah celebration I figured we would talk about tonight, because there's a very interesting tshuva written, which is most of this page, by the Sridei Eish, who was Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, who survived the Holocaust and went to Switzerland and wrote a few volumes of tshuvas and on some very contemporary topics, and this is one of the topics in his time, which is probably written, I don't know the exact date, I don't have it on here, but it was probably written sometime in the early 60s or late 50s, where he was asked this question. Oh, it had to be the early 60s, because Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked a question about the Bat Mitzvah celebrations in 1959 by a rabbi in Howard Beach, Rabbi Kahana. I don't know who he was, but it was written to him from Howard Beach, and he was also asking that. So it must have been one of the topics of the day in the late 50s, early 60s. So we'll touch on that. So let's just first, because everybody deals with it from this perspective, and I didn't put this on the source sheets again, because we did discuss this a number of weeks ago, probably about a month ago at this point, the main disagreement. Remember, we had two Gemaras that discussed the idea of Chukas Akum, and the Torah says in B'chukosayim lo selecha, you cannot walk in the ways of the idol worshippers, let's assume. And the question is, how do you apply that law? It's a very non-specific, very general law. Don't go in their ways. So what are their ways? Right? You can take it as far as you can't build buildings, you can't do it. Can you not do anything? Because it says you can't do things that the idol worshippers do. Or is it more limited? So the Gemara asks a question about burning the belongings of kings. And the Gemara says, we find that one Gemara says that on a day that the idol worshippers burned the belongings of a king who passed away, you can't do business with them because it's like a day of Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, but we also do that. We have times where we also burn the belongings of a king. How could you say it's Avodah Zarah? Is it Avodah Zarah to burn the belongings of a king? So the Gemara, one Gemara says, it might be, but nevertheless, it's okay because it's written in the Torah that we do something similar. And we pointed out it's written in the Nevi'im, not in the Torah, but that means that it was done in a long time ago by the Jews, so you can't say that we're learning from the non-Jews. And the other Gemara said, no, it's not Avodah Zarah. The fact that they burned the belongings of a king doesn't show that they were worshipping that king now as an Avodah Zarah. It was simply a sign of honor and respect to this king, that he was such a wonderful king, where nobody is fit to use any of his belongings, and therefore we're going to burn those belongings. And remember, the Gemara also discussed how to put somebody to death by the sword. What was the more appropriate way? To cut off his head standing up, or to chop off his head when he was laying down, basically. And the part of the discussion was, well, that's the way of the idol worshippers, but it's written in our Torah, so that was part of the discussion. If you remember, we had two opinions as to how to put those Gemaras together. Tosus says that we have two types of chukim, two types of actions, of ways of the non-Jews, and sometimes it's enough just to say that since it says it in the Torah, you're allowed to do so. He says there's certain things that they do as part of their worship, and those are obviously forbidden. In theory, I guess, even if it was written in the Torah, but it was not written in the Torah. Anything that they do for the worship of their idols, of their Avodah Zarah, that is forbidden. No questions asked. and therefore we can't do the same. So it says the second type of action, of custom that they have, that is at least under discussion, is something that's done not for Avodah Zarah purposes, it's just something that they do. It's some other act. And that act, if the non-Jews do it, we're not allowed to do it unless it's written in the Torah. Now, the problem with that opinion is that that makes for a very broad prohibition. Right? And again, the question is, where do you draw the line? And the question is, where do you draw the line even in acts of worship? There are many idols who are worshipped by a person bowing down to the idol. So does that mean we can't bow as part of our prayer services? Mm-hmm. There are many, and again, take it outside of the realm of worship. Does it mean that we can't we can't go shopping, we can't eat, we can't do all these things? Obviously not, but again, we need parameters, what is and what is not. The Maharik, who was also one of the earlier commentators, the Maharik had a different understanding of the Gemaras, and the way he put them together was that really they were arguing. And he said that we focus on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, who says that it doesn't matter, written in the Torah, not written in the Torah, is kind of put aside. He says, rather, the main point is that the burning of the king's belongings is chashivusa, simply honor and respect for the king. So what is allowed and what is not allowed? So he says, well, it depends. If it's done for their purpose of worship, it's usur. You can't do it. Mm-hmm. Then he says, the actions that they do that are prohibited, so there are two types. One is if it's done for immodest reasons, so if there's certain clothing that are worn for immodest reasons, that would be prohibited. And the second, he says, is something that is done for no reason whatsoever. Right? And he was asked, if you recall, he was asked about the doctors. Can they wear the white coat? Can they wear a certain specific, sounds like a white coat like we have, or scrubs, so that they would be able to, people would know that they're doctors. So he was asked, are you allowed to, this is something that the non-Jews started doing, are we allowed to do this? So he answered that the only time it's prohibited because of Chukas Akum is if it's for immodest or immoral reasons. He said this obviously is not in that category. Or if it's done for no reason whatsoever. He says, but here there's a reason for it. Here there's a good reason for it. It's to recognize that they're doctors, so that people should know who they should go to. And therefore, he says, it's okay. The reason why, and this is one of the main points, the reason why any action that is done for no reason is prohibited for us to imitate their ways, the reason for almost the entire prohibition is because the reason for the prohibition is that we shouldn't do things just to be like the idol worshippers. Right? And the way he wrote it was that anything that is puzzling, that is questionable as to why a person would do it, but they do it. And he points out, because the pasuk says, "Ubechuk oseam lo selechu," chok is a law without a reason. So if there's an action that they do without a reason, and if we do it, the only reason why we would be doing it is to imitate them and follow in their ways, he says that's why it would be prohibited.
Okay. But no reason. There's always a reason. The question is what you constitute as a valid reason. Why are you wearing that suit today? That style didn't exist 100 years
ago. Okay, good. So let's talk about that. So if you ask the question, we'll start there. If you turn over the sheet to the messier looking side, where it has a whole bunch of different names on top, Sride, Moshe, Igros Moshe, right? It's kind of mixing and matching a little bit. So Moshe Feinstein was asked the following question. If you look on the second column on the page, on the right side, it says Tav Samach, but that's really the Sride H's page. So the Igros Moshe, which is Simon Pe Aleph, it says in the middle, it's the second column from the right. V'davar malbushim shem medina zu, clothing in this nation, in this country, im yesh chashash iser malbushay nachrim, is there a problem to dress in modern day clothing because it is the dress, the clothing of non-Jews, the habayim lekan mi Poland im rashayim lelovshon, and the immigrants from Poland, are they allowed to wear this clothing? Right, that was the question he asked. And he was asked, it tells you, on Yud Dalad Mar Cheshvan Tav Shin Yud Gimel, so about 61 years ago, right, so give or take a month. So 61 years ago, in 1953, he was asked this question. So he says, we'll just read by the arrows because, and I cut out some of it, but it's interesting to see how he deals with this. The inyan hamalbushim shebimedina zu she'ein chiluk bein Yisraelim lenachrim. He says, the dress in this country, in America, where there is no distinguishing between a Jew and a non-Jew, no distinction. Im mechuyavim bnei polin shebo'u lepo, v'gam ha-noladim mehem bepo, lilbosh osam malbushim shayinogim bepolin mitzad ha-isr dim abushay nachrim. Do the immigrants from Poland have to dress basically in the way that they dressed in Poland, and even their children? Even if their parents changed their clothing when they came here, hayazeh be'isr, maybe it was prohibited. Shenishar ha'isr k'de'isa b'chsam sofer, fine. Because maybe it was usr, and now their children want to know, should they go back to dressing like they did in Poland, or are they allowed to dress as their parents and as Americans do? Everybody is mako. Everybody is lenient. Are they doing the right thing? Right? Being lenient, is it okay? So, it's an interesting way of asking a question. Right? Everybody's doing it. Is there a reason why? Right? So, okay. So, again, I wasn't there when Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote the tshuva. So it's hard to know whether he is justifying the way that everybody was acting. Although, again, if you read the tshuva, I didn't think so. You know, I thought that he was answering the question. And there was a reason why everybody was lenient, and he didn't think that there was a problem with it, and he goes on to explain why. And as we'll see, the way he answers the question is not just, well, really it should be a problem, but, you know, what are we going to do? Right? It doesn't sound, I didn't think that the way he was writing the question. But maybe I'm reading, like you said, I'm wearing this suit today, so maybe it's not fair for me to read the question, the answer in that way. But this is what he says. So we'll skip the next paragraph, because in the next paragraph he quotes basically what we just said, that the Maharik explains that if there is a reason for a certain custom or action, then it is not considered included in the prohibition of Chukas Akum. The Od Chidesh Mahari Kula, that's where he says this, that if there, and he says, Kula Sha'av Be'elu Shahu Below Tam V'Tzorach, Elo Lachok Hevel V'Shtus, for no reason, an action for no reason, Enam Asurim, it's only prohibited Kishu Osek De Lidmos Elehem, it's only prohibited if it's being done to imitate them, and to be like them, V'lo L'Toeles Yudua, and not for a known purpose. And he proves this from a Tosefta, fine. And then he quotes about the doctor's coat. Now skip to the next arrow in the next column. He says, line up from the arrow, V'zehu gam kavanas harama. This is what the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeia, Rav Moshe Isserles, we know, is the Ashkenaz from Krakow, so he was writing the Ashkenazic practices and laws. He says, "Kemi shehevi zemi maharik of maharik mufurish." Since he quotes the Maharik, and in the Maharik it says this explicitly, "Im kain pashut." It's obvious to me. She'ein shum shemetz iser b'stam begadim shaloshim b'medina zu. There is no shemetz. It's not even a trace of prohibition to dress in the clothing that they wear in this country. Even though the non-Jews also wear this clothing, it does not fall under the prohibition of dressing in the ways of the non-Jews. First of all, he says there's no avodah zara in the clothing, right? Meaning the people who wear them are not necessarily idol worshippers, and that seems to be more of the issue. And he says, anyway, you're not wondering why people dress in this way. It's linoy. It's to look nice. This is the way that they look. That's the style nowadays. So there's a reason why people dress in this clothing. It's for style. So when the long coats were in style, they wore long coats. When the short coats and ties became style, so that becomes the style. So people aren't dressing in this way because this is the way of Avodah Zarah. They're not dressing this way to be like the Nazis. This is the style of the time. Vigam Belize, he says, and anyway, in the next paragraph he basically says, even anyway, he says, how can you say that this is non-Jewish clothing? There are Jews and non-Jews wearing this just the same. So who's to say that a jacket and pants are the ways of the non-Jews, of the idol worshippers? Who says? He says, you have Jews who are here who are wearing the same clothing. Everybody's wearing this together. So he says, in Cain, if you skip down to the last arrow, therefore, af elu shabo mi Poland lakan, even the immigrants from Poland, rashayin lehislabesh bebegadim shalovshin bekan, they're allowed to dress in the way that we dress here. Dekemish ein iser klal, there is not a prohibition at all. This is why I think that he's not just trying to explain why it's okay. He says, ein iser klal, he speaks in very strong language. There's no prohibition whatsoever. It's not even considered. It's not like they're walking around in priest's clothing here, and we have to explain why people do that. It's like you go from one town of Jews to another town of Jews. In the Sephardic community, they dress one way. In the Ashkenazic community, they dress another way. So you go from one to the other. You're going to tell me it's prohibited for me visiting an old Sephardic community in wherever, in old Spain, that I wouldn't be allowed to put on whatever clothing they're wearing because they would be changing. It's the same thing. It's just, so in Spain they dress in one way, in Poland they dress another way, so in America they dress another way. He says, but you're going to say that that's considered chukas akum? He says he doesn't think so at all. And again, he says there's nothing wrong with dressing in the way that they used to dress. If that's their custom, they're allowed to, he says, and certainly if they want to separate themselves, he says they're certainly able to, and that's in the next column that I cut off. But he says he doesn't think that there is any reason for prohibition. And you see, he gives two reasons. One of them is, and this is why I jumped onto this question, because he says there's a reason. Right, the only time, again, the reason for the iser, for the prohibition of chukas akum in the Torah, is because we shouldn't be doing things to imitate the ways of the idol worshippers, because in a sense we want to be like the idol worshippers. So in that sense, if there's an explanation, right? We spoke a number of weeks ago. We talked about not wearing a yarmulke. And Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked, is a person allowed to not wear a yarmulke, or by not wearing a yarmulke, is it considered like chukas akum? And he said no, because the reason why non-Jews don't wear yarmulkes is not because they're doing it for religious reasons. It's more comfortable that way. It's more comfortable for them to go without a hat. How do we know? Because during the winter, they wear a hat. When it's cold outside, they put a hat on. So he says it's not an issue of chukas akum to wear a yarmulke, not to wear a yarmulke. There's a reason, some type of rationalization as to why they're doing what they're doing. So you're right. If you don't give that a boundary either, so you can explain almost anything.
Even this excuse, this reason, one of them being it's the style, can be applied to anything. Like, this is the style of the time in the location you're talking about.
In regard to clothing.
In regard to anything. Why did you design that on your house? Well, that's the style of what they're doing in my country.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to think of something that could be considered having no reason whatsoever.
So the only thing we came up with so far, I don't know if the only thing, but one of the things was going trick or treating.
That has a reason, right?
So if you go with the reason that it has pagan roots.
Right, that's the reason.
But you could say that nowadays in America, nobody knows the pagan roots. And if you ask any of the kids who are out trick-or-treating, nobody's going to say, well, you know, it's all ghost day, so we get dressed up and we try to scare people and we say trick-or-treat, because if you don't give me a trick, if you don't give me a treat, I'm going to do a trick. Nobody's going to say that. They say, we want to get some candy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to say, maybe that's enough of a reason, because they like candy?
No, I would say the reason is that's the tradition of what kids do on this holiday in this country.
Exactly.
And you would
but
say that
the only reason why a Jew would go trick-or-treating is to imitate them. Right? That would be the only reason.
No. They want candy.
Right.
The kids want candy.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Right. But I don't know. Okay, maybe that's where we would draw the line. Can we say that you could do something?
Well, let's sorry, but if you separate,
it's true. People want to just want candy.
If you're going to say that people, especially kids, don't know of the pagan roots, so this does not have religious connotations at all. It's just following.
Right.
So then every other holiday then that Jews in America celebrate can fall under the same argument. Well, why are you having a Thanksgiving dinner? And we covered this already, because you're trying to imitate them. We're saying it's not avodah zarah. We already covered that. But why are you doing it? Because that's what people do in this country. I'm imitating the people of this country.
Right. So in theory, if that was the reason why somebody was doing something, so it's true, that could be a problem of hukasaku. It's true. Yeah. It's almost putting a person's intention into the equation. This opinion. Yeah. Yeah, it could be. It could be. Because if the purpose of doing something is because this is what they do here, if it's done for a reason, though, like
July 4th,
let's say. So there's nothing religious about July 4th. And there's, as an American, a reason to celebrate July 4th. It's the Day of Independence. So that's not... There's no pagan roots, no religious overtones to it, and therefore people, again, we spoke about what does it mean to celebrate July 4th, like having a barbecue, celebrating July 4th, going to the fireworks. You can't go to the fireworks because
those were off me.
A parade, going to a Memorial Day parade, again, that's for a reason. There's a reason for the celebration, which has no, so that's different than doing something for no reason whatsoever.
It says on who you ask whether there's a reason.
I guess so.
No,
I guess so.
But we have to start with some reason. We may not, it's
so the
Gemara
talks
throughout
about
throughout
okay,
the pagan
so
roots
because
the
example.
Kids and the adults don't know
the
reason.
The Gemara talks about cases where the idol worshippers would wear black shoelaces. So it was prohibited for Jews in those times to wear black shoelaces. Why did they wear black shoelaces? Just what they did. There was no reason for it. So they weren't allowed to wear. So Jews were not allowed to wear black shoelaces because it's something that the idol worshippers did.
So things that have, I'm not trying to understand, things that have religious roots, even if people forgot about them, would that be considered hukasakum, or is it only things that has a religious connotation and you know of it and therefore you shouldn't do it?
It could be both.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, there's in the Ma'arik's eyes, and this seems to be the opinion that we follow, most people follow as our Moshe does, and Rabbi Yosef follows, and many people seem to follow this opinion. There are three categories of actions that would be prohibited. One is that they're religious in nature, so that would be for a Jew to do something that is done for religious purposes by a non-Jew. If it's not, either it's Avodah Zarah itself, but that would be like worshipping the idol, but if it's just something that's done connected with the Avodah Zarah, so that would be Chukasakum, that would be type A. Type B would be something that is disconnected from Chukasakum, but within type B there are two actions, two categories. One, that it's done for immodest reasons, right? Immodest reasons, and then the second one would be something that's done for no reason whatsoever. So once you can give a reason to explain why something is done, you're right, you get around a lot of the potential issues. It's true. Which might be why there were some who were more comfortable following the opinion of Tosos, where there was clear, again, not clear parameters, but there's a clear prohibition that anything that's not written in the Torah, you can't do it if the non-Jews do it. Now, that also needs to be contained, because where do you take that? How far do you take that? So that's what everybody's question. The Vilna Gaon follows that opinion of Tosus. He disagrees. Rav Moshe Isserles on the page of Shulchan Aruch says, we follow this Maharik, we have these three categories of actions that are prohibited, something with no reason at all, something that's done for immodest reasons, and something that's done for Avodah Zarah. Then the Vilna Gaon says, hold on a second, and he asks questions from the Gemara, he doesn't think it makes sense. He'd rather say that we follow the opinion of Tosus, that something that's done for Avodah Zarah is obviously prohibited. Something that's done for no reason at all, so even if you can explain it, it's still prohibited unless it's written in the Torah, then it's allowed. And then the question is, so, you know, where do you draw that line? But again, he's creating a broader prohibition, as opposed to the Maharik, which is really limiting the prohibition, because you're right, a lot of things that are done have a reason. Right? Either for pagan reasons, which is a problem, for religious reasons, or there's some rationalization, which would be okay. So, you know, all these, dress, you know, there's a question about a military funeral, taps at a funeral. And it's the same question that was asked about, you know, putting flowers on the coffin or putting flowers on the grave. And all those questions are also, are those prohibited because of Chukas Akum? So there were some who said yes, because they said, look, we follow the opinion of the Vilna Gaon, and therefore anything that's not, that's religious in nature is prohibited, but these aren't religious. He says, but still, they're not mentioned in the Torah. There's nowhere in the Torah that we find the idea of putting flowers on a grave, or nowhere do we find the idea of you know, shooting at a funeral, and therefore they should be prohibited, because the only reason we're doing it is to be like the non-Jews. But not everybody agreed with that. Vaji Yosef has a tshuva about putting flowers on the graves, or putting flowers, walking in front of the mace with flowers, or behind, or putting them even on the coffin as you're going to the funeral. And he said that there's a reason for it. First of all, he thinks that we find it in the Gemara, and he believes that when the Gemara says that something that's written in the Torah is okay, it doesn't actually have to be written in the Torah. It's just that if we see that it's been done by Jews for many years, it's like look, it's been in the Torah, so obviously it's something that we've been doing for years. You can't now tell me now it should be prohibited. So he says you do find cases in the Gemara where they talk about, are you allowed to smell the besamim of a mace? So what does that talk? Because you're not allowed to get any benefit from a mace, from a corpse. So are you allowed to get benefit from the besamim of a corpse? So what's the besamim of a corpse? So the besamim of the corpse is that they would put besamim, some nice smelling flowers or spices, either on the corpse or around the corpse. In those days it was because of the smell. But he says, you see the idea. Or there are discussions about hadassim. They would put hadassim, asita, which is some type of myrtle branch, again, for the smell, really. But he says it's the same idea of giving respect and honor to the corpse. And in a sense, if that's the purpose of it, and even if it didn't say it in the Torah, he thinks it would be okay, because the whole purpose of putting flowers there is to show respect, or to show honor, or to show care and love, connection between the person who's putting the flowers down and the mace. It's a sign of respect in some places. So he says it doesn't happen in Israel. He says it's not something that's done here. He says, but still, I don't think that it would be prohibited as Chukas Akum, because there's a reason why people do it. And the taps also. So the Sridei Esh throws this in this tshuva about the Bas Mitzvah that we'll talk about now. He throws it in just in one paragraph. He says, and I saw an article written by Rabbi Tzal Zolti, who was a great Rav in Yerushalayim. He says, I saw an article written by him. He says that he doesn't think he could do military funerals. He says, I disagree wholeheartedly. It's to show that the Jewish army shouldn't be any different than other nations' armies, and that we should be a respected army as well, and therefore that's the way the military funerals are done, as a sign of respect for the fallen soldier, and therefore he thinks that it's no problem with Chukas Akum at all. Again, because there's a rationalization as to why we do it. It's done as a sign of respect. So even those things, that they don't have reasons, I'm sure there are reasons why they shoot in the air and they do what they do at the military funerals, but they're not, even if you want to say, look, that's just something they do, why would we copy that? He says, no, it's a sign of respect. It's become at least a sign of honor and respect. So he thinks it should be. So yes, is it a loosely defined prohibition where maybe it makes it more difficult to apply it in a prohibitive manner if we have this broad out by saying, well, if you can explain why we do it, then it's okay? Yeah. Yeah, it does limit the application of the prohibition.
It really comes down to whether you like that reason or not, whether we like the reason. There's always a reason. It's whether it's a reason that we would find acceptable as Jesus incorporating into our daily lives.
Again, because if it's not a rational reason, or a reason that we find rational, then we would say the only reason why somebody's doing it is to imitate them. And once it's being done simply to imitate them, that's problematic. Because again, that's the spirit of the law, of the whole idea behind what's sitting under it, is that we're supposed to be proud of who we are, that we don't have to imitate other nations and other religions and what we have and what we do. We should just be proud of who we are and what we have, that we're not looking for additional ideas and actions and things to do. So once we're doing something to imitate them, that's problematic. If it's being done for a reason, then it's okay, because then it's not being done to imitate them. So let's see part of this Bat Mitzvah tshuva, because it's an interesting tshuva. So there was a Rav of Aaron Volkin, who in his tshuva began Aaron, he was murdered in the Holocaust. He was born in 1861, but he was in Poland, I believe, and he was murdered in the Holocaust with his whole family. So, and he has a tshuva sefer, and again, it must have been written, the sefer obviously before 1942 when he was murdered, and in that sefer he was already being asked about Bat Mitzvah celebrations and whether they were something that should be done. And he said that he felt that it was Chukas Akum. What's interesting is that in the same tshuva, he is asked about using organs in services, or even during the week in the shul, can you use an organ? And he felt that it was, stay away from it. So it's kind of the same idea of Chukas Akum. He felt even during the week it shouldn't be used. And he mentions in there, it's interesting, he says that he doesn't think instruments should be used in sanctuaries, for this reason, that he thinks it's too close to, just breaking barriers and leading from one thing to the next, and then you'll be using it on Shabbos. And then they'll be, you'll be using them on Shabbos. Yeah. That itself.
Did Levim in the temple days play instruments? So
they were allowed
first,
to.
Didn't we?
So they were allowed to, for other reasons. We have a rule in the Beis HaMikdash, Ein Shpus BaMikdash, that any rabbinic prohibition that was for, don't do this because it may lead to a Torah prohibition, so those prohibitions did not apply in the Beis HaMikdash. So something like that, where the reason why we can't play musical instruments, which nowadays already is questionable, but let's assume we can't play musical instruments because you may come to fix it, and fixing would be a Torah prohibition, so therefore, in the Beis HaMikdash, the Levim were allowed, I think. Yeah.
Can you tell us further the source in the Torah for that? By Nurim and Yom Tov?
That was, by services.
By
not
services.
Shabbos.
Not Shabbos, but during the week.
It's done.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Right. So it's a good question. Meaning, so he was saying that it became a problem because that was something that was done by the Christians, the Catholics, right? These organs. I grew up in a shul, that was where for in the beginning of my memories there, behind the Aron Kodesh,
were
the pipes, were the big gold pipes that weren't removed yet. So, to me, it's an interesting idea that you can't have the organs or the, I guess you can't have the pipes there. But they had, in the beginning, when I moved in there, so they bought a church, which also is a whole question. I don't know if maybe we'll get to it, maybe not. But they bought a church and used it as a shul until recently when they built a new shul. And then they removed the pipes after a few years. But I remember these big gold pipes right behind the aron. It was the whole front of the shul, behind where the rabbi sat, behind where the president sat, behind the aron, were these huge gold pipes, and they went up like this to a point on the top. At first, when I moved in, I thought they were there for decoration. I didn't know what they were. I thought they were there. But I hear you're saying we had the idea first to use it for music, to use musical instruments for prayer. He does say that, I think he writes this, that the one exception would be for a simcha, for a wedding.
No, you can't write.
But it's something like that. I guess it's somewhere. Where if there was a wedding or a simcha going on, you'd be able to use the shul. Oh, that's also a question. Can you make a wedding in a shul? So that's why I don't think he said that. I don't remember where I saw that. But anyway, that the leaving the organ on the side for now. So he does say that he thinks it would be chukas akum to celebrate a bas mitzvah because it was never done. It was never done. It was never a Jewish celebration for a girl who becomes 12 years old to have a celebration.
So what is the chuk you're imitating? Because I don't know if non-Jews celebrate 12-year-olds.
Right. Yes. No. The if you look here, he says, on the rightmost column, the second paragraph from the bottom, where he says anaf shlishi, he says now nira minidon didan im mutter lachog chagigas bat mitzvah. The Yeshirotzim Lasar Mishum Ubuchukosehem. Some people want to say it's Usher because of Chukosehem. Ulanias Daiti Toloi Bazeh. Shavim Namar Sheha Confirmation. Confirmation. Shel Ha'akum of the idol worshippers. Hula Shema Vodazara. Yesh Lasar Mishum Ubuchukosehem Bechol Gavne. So if you want to say that the confirmation of the Christians.
Is that at 12 year olds?
I don't know when
they do it. And how
about different than apartments? Right,
exactly. So that's what he says. I think it's somewhere around that age.
I think it's like 10 or something.
So it's the same idea. So he says, Lufiza Hayalanu Lasar Gam Chagigas Bar Mitzvah. He says, but then why would you be allowed to make a Bar Mitzvah celebration?
Mm-hmm.
If the whole idea is that, well, they have a confirmation and we're going to have a Bas Mitzvah, that's too similar. He says, well, then you can't celebrate a Bar Mitzvah either. Shari Islam Osim. Confirmation gam lezacharim, and he says not only that. Hayalanu lasor gam esat tefila, then we can't pray. Gam he mispalim lavodazara because they also pray to their avodazara. So he says it can't be. Al shavazel lo shayach sheyesh bo mishum avodazara. It can't be that there's avodazara. Lo shosim kein chagigas simchasam laregel bagrusam shel bneiham. All right, he doesn't think that there's not a avodazara in the confirmation. I guess that can be debated. V'gam ha-reformim me'imanu einam osim kem k'dei lehidam uslam. Even the reform doesn't make these celebrations to imitate them. Ela l'shem chagigas mishbacha v'simchasa she'igiyu b'neim l'bagrus. It's because it's a sign of a young man or woman reaching the age of being a teenager. Isn't that a cause for celebration?
No. And you'll find that.
So, as you excuse me, I made a note on one of my copies here. But as you can imagine, he goes on to discuss the whole idea of a bas mitzvah, and he talks about how, even though at a certain time maybe it wasn't done, and that's true, he says times are changing. And again, this is interesting because this is being written in 1960 something. Because Moshe Feinstein was asked about the Bas Mitzvah by Rabbi Kahana from Howard Beach, and he told him he thinks it's okay, but it shouldn't be in a shul. Right? And everybody quotes this. Moshe Feinstein said it shouldn't be in a shul. So I looked at the tshuva, and Moshe does say that it shouldn't be in the celebration, shouldn't be in the shul, because it's not a Sudas Mitzvah. It's not like a bris. Or even a bar mitzvah, although not all bar mitzvahs are sudas mitzvahs either, if they're not on the day of the actual bar mitzvah. But we'll
in the building.
Oh, so hold on. He says because shuls, you can't use shuls for things that are not a sudas mitzvah. But that's only the sanctuary itself. Right? If you had another room, if you had a kiddush room, so you can use a kiddush room. You don't only use a kiddush room for a sudas mitzvah. So, I could be wrong, but if you the way that Ramosha Feinstein seems to say, it seems to me that he's saying that you can't have a bas mitzvah celebration in the sanctuary of a shul. Not the shul building, but in the sanctuary of the shul, because in the sanctuary of the shul there should only be mitzvah, sudas mitzvah. But in the building of the shul, it doesn't seem like Ramosha Feinstein thinks there should be a problem. So even Sri Day Esh of Weinberg, he quotes Ramosha. I agree with Ramosha Feinstein said they shouldn't be in a shul. I think, you know, he was probably referring to back then, they had a shul. It was a one room, like you go to Brooklyn, a shtiebel. That was the room. They did, you know, they had the kiddush in there and they learned a little bit. So it was a, but it wasn't, they didn't have a hall. So he said you should do it in a hall. But many shuls nowadays have halls, which is why you have bas mitzvahs even in shuls nowadays, because they're not taking the celebration, the food, the meal is not taking place in the sanctuary. It's taking place in some other room in the shul. So it's interesting to see how he writes about the focus of chinuch, and he writes about how, and again, in the '60s, he says that he thinks it's okay because it's the purposes the lechazek, to strengthen the girls' commitment and love for and desire to fulfill the mitzvahs, and her responsibilities is becoming a bas mitzvah now. And he says, but some say that it's against the way that it used to be. If you look on the third column, the second paragraph, aval achshav nishtanu hadoros shinoi atzum. He says, but nowadays things have changed. Hashpas harachov okeres milev kol nar v'nara kol zik shol yadus. It's difficult. It's become much more difficult to be a Jew. The habanos mischanchos v'batei sefer nachrim v'batei sefer n'chilonim. This is the time before most girls went to Jewish schools. She'enam shokdim lahashash b'lev tamideim ava l'torah Yisrael minhagi hakodesh shol yadus hashleima. It wasn't a time where the girls were in schools where they were trying to imbue them with a love of Judaism and of the Torah. Achshav mutal aleinu l'rakes kol kochoseinu b'chinuch an shol habanos. It's our responsibility to be mechanech them, to teach the girls in the, and to focus them. He says, it's so hurtful to me. It hurts my heart. He says, because in, for the general chinuch klali, for general studies, limudos, limude safos, sifros, chilonis, madaya teva, to learn math and science, the haruach, doagim, libanos, kol libanos. They're worried that the girls should have an education, secular education, like the boys. But for religious learning, limudei Tanakh, the sifros of Musar shel Chazal, and the learnings of Musar v'chinuch lemitzvos ma'asiyos shanashim chayavos mehen, chinuch for the mitzvos that they're obligated in, maznich legamre, they completely leave it alone. Le'ashdenu le'ashreinu, sorry, le'ashreinu. Unfortunately, amdu gedolei Yisrael bedor hakodem. Ah, Kalkala has those. Fortunately, in the previous generation, the Gedolei Hador stood up and they set up, this is when they set up the Beis Yaakov movement. He says, fortunately, it was the beginning of the focus of educating girls also in the yeshiva system, which Baruch Hashem has now spread and is very common that the girls go just like the boys do. But in those days, he says, so all the more so we have an obligation that we should celebrate a bas mitzvah, show her what an exciting and celebratory time this is. And he says, and you as the rabbi, whoever he was writing to, you should give a speech at the bas mitzvah, should be sure to give a speech at the bas mitzvah to try to be mechazek the girl and to try to inspire her. So that's his take on it. And he thinks that it's not a problem of chukas akum. He says, because if it was, then bar mitzvah should be also problematic. He says he thinks that they're good things. He says, I agree with the Rav Moshe Feinstein that it shouldn't be in the shul. It's fine, he says, but certainly that there should be a problem with celebrating a bas mitzvah. He says, I don't think there's any problem with it. So again, he says, as long as the intention of the celebration, of those who are making the celebration, is not just to imitate the ways of the Avodah Zarah or of the Reform movement, who also at the time, you know, was becoming bigger. And so he says, as long as those are not the intentions of the one celebrating, he says, I think it's a good thing. It's a positive experience for the girls. And if a person says a Dvar Torah, it becomes like a Sudas Mitzvah. So he says, it's even a time to celebrate.
And is that in practical terms? So does that apply to not using the shul nowadays?
What do you mean?
We use a shul.
We do.
I mean, we use it, I mean, for board meetings. Not board meetings. General meetings are in the shul, right? I mean, so, you know,
using the shul.
I think,
well, it could be meetings for the purposes of the community.
Shechayin, it's so infrequent. We make a bracha on the mitzvah.
But we don't.
If you say Shechayin, I know you do it infrequently. It's a joke.
No, it could be, I mean, again, it could be that something like that could be like the Tzarchet Tzibur.
That's not really my question. My question is really, is
we
really,
don't use
do we have any
from anything.
Do we have
the
any restrictions if a girl's having a bat mitzvah in shul, that there are any restrictions in the use of the actual, you know, shul area?
Can they have speeches?
Can they have speeches
in
there, right. And they have speeches.
I mean, I assume the answer is yes, because the rabbi gives Dvar Torah every Shabbos with it directed to the bat mitzvah going on. There's been a few.
Well, bas mitzvahs?
Occasionally girls have gone up and...
Based on Rav Moshe's writing, his tshuva, if that's the basis, and I don't know if that's exactly the way people do nowadays. In our shul, I don't think we would allow anybody to have the celebratory meal in the main shul, in the sanctuary, which is. Seems to me.
I agree.
But it seems to me that's the problem. Yeah. Is to use a place of tefillah, to use the shul for a suda, which is not a suda's mitzvah.
They're saying don't have a party in the shul. That's really, isn't it? Like, it's not just that, you know, you think it should be used for.
Yes, but I don't know that, you know, holding the speeches in the sanctuary of a shul would necessarily be the celebration and
we used to, in the old years ago when we were still dabbing in the house, we used to have kiddush in the shul.
Right. That has potential issues of eating in shul and using a shul. It could be that when the shul is being built, usually it's done with the intent that it should be used not only as a shul, but it's being used as a general room, which kind of gets out of some of these problems. Even if it was built in a way where the intent was that it would be used for general reasons, still, Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't think that a bas mitzvah should be held in the sanctuary itself. Again, I we can look at the tshuva again, but if I recall correctly, it was more the meal and the problem of having something which is like a sudas rishus, as opposed to sudas mitzvah inside the shul, as opposed to just being, could be it's just because it's a bas mitzvah and it doesn't look right, and, you know, I'm not sure exactly the application of it. But in general, you know, what's done is that, you know, the shul is used, I think, for speeches. We have to have speeches in the shul, but that's just, you know, saying a Dvar Torah. Saying a Dvar Torah after, you know, where not during davening, after davening, when there's you know, they're setting up lunch downstairs, so they go up to the shul and they have speeches. So those types of things are done in the shul. Fine. One last thing I wanted to just mention to finish off this topic, and that was the fourth column on that page with the Igros Moshe. We don't have to read it inside, but it's a very interesting tshuva and something that I've been trying to get to probably for like 3 or 4 shiurim, and we never get to it. But it's just a very interesting, and I'm not sure exactly how to apply this, but it's a very interesting tshuva of the Sam Sofer. The Sam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, who lived in Pressburg in the 18th century, we know that he was one of the rabbis standing at the forefront fighting against the Reform movement. Right? That's the time that the Sam Sofer was living. Just to give you a context of who he was. Now, he had a tshuva. He was asked about shaving. Are you allowed to shave? And what he writes to that, what he answers, is very interesting. And again, I'm not sure how to apply this in other cases, but it's something to think about. He says that, first of all, he says, shaving has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. He says, because the reason why the non-Jews shave is because there was a Polish king who was a eunuch, and he couldn't grow a beard. So he decreed that nobody can have a beard. And therefore, nobody was allowed to grow a beard. So all the non-Jews didn't have beards. So it became that if you didn't have a beard, you were assumed to be a non-Jew. He says, and then in the times of the Crusades, in the 1096, he quotes, in the times of the Crusades, he says that people decided, or the rabbis told the Jews, that they can all shave their beards, because this way the Crusaders wouldn't know if they were Jewish or not. they had a beard, they knew they were Jewish, because nobody, no non-Jew had a beard, because they knew there was this decree from the eunuch king, and even after the king was no longer alive, that kind of stayed. So that none of them had beards. But he says, once they were, but then in the time of the Crusades, they allowed them, they told, the Jews were told, shave your beards. And only the people who stayed inside never left, only they had beards. Everybody else shaved their beards. He says, so, first of all, it had nothing to do with Avodah Zarah to shave your beard. And even if it did, he says, since it became something that the Jews did, even if they did it originally in a way that was prohibited, nowadays it's okay. Right? Meaning, it's to me, what it sounded like was like Maris Ayin. Right? We spoke about Maris Ayin when we talked about electricity a few years ago, and we talked about how Maris Ayin depends on people's perception of what's happening. So when time clocks came out and somebody used the time clock for their light, it was usher, because nobody knew about time clocks. It was a new invention, and they would see the lights going on and off in your house on Shabbos. They would think, this person is Mechalel Shabbos. Nowadays, not a person doesn't know what a time clock is. And if your light's on the entire Shabbos, they say, why don't you have a time clock? So the perception changes, and the definition of Maris Ayin, or the application of Maris Ayin, changes with the times based on what's done and what's not done, what's known and what's not known. In a sense, the Chasam Sofer is saying something very similar to Chukas Akum. And I haven't seen this quoted and applied in any other modern case necessarily, but it's a very interesting statement. That even if shaving one's beard was Chukas Akum, and the first group of people who did it, for however many years they did it, it would have been prohibited. Once it was done, it certainly was okay. So for generations afterwards, it became okay. Right? It's almost like saying that even if wearing modern clothing would have been Chukas Akum, nowadays, since everybody was doing it already, it's okay. Right? It's a very interesting idea to define Chukas Akum, which means that the first, let's say, 500 people who shaved, they were violating the Isser in the Torah. But everybody after them, it's okay, because, look, Jews do it also. So I'm not sure how to apply that. Right? Again, let's take our case of trick-or-treating. Can you say, well, Jews also go trick-or-treating nowadays, so it's okay. Right? You have Jews celebrating whatever, fill in the blank. So can you say, oh, now it's okay, because we're not the first ones to do it. Is it? So I'm not sure, but it's a very interesting
statement. Where's the tipping point?
Right. You don't want to be on the wrong side of the tipping point, where you're the one who's bringing it to, well, now it's done, now it's acceptable, now it's done. But the fact, to me, it was surprising that this idea even existed. That you can take something that is usser and make it mutter if you have enough people doing it.
When you say enough people, you're talking about Torah observing Jews, though, right? You probably don't have a tipping point of Torah observing Jews going trick or treating.
I guess Torah observing Jews. I don't know.
For people who don't even know they're Jewish and they're going trick or treating, you're
okay.
Not going to rely on them and
right.
Say that's the majority now.
Correct.
It's acceptable.
Correct. But I'm not sure what to do with this Shuvah of the Chasam Sofer, but I found it so interesting when I was that I wanted to share it at some point in one of these shiurim about Chukas Akum, so I got it in. And with that, I think we'll close the book on Chukas Akum. As I mentioned, next week we won't have